All right, so today is the 24th of April, 2018. It is the ninth day of Iyar, Tavshinayin Ches, and we are up to the last day of our learning of Perek Yud Ches. So Perek Yud Ches is a very interesting parak. It really seems to be three things. It could divide up into three sections. The first section is make sure you keep all of my mitzvos, as well as including in there the mitzvah of v'chukoseichem lo seilechu, which we covered yesterday. And then we have the middle section, which is the listing of the various arayos, the various illicit relations that a person could possibly have. You have molech stuck in there, and then a couple of more arayos. And then you have the conclusion of make sure you keep all my mitzvahs and safeguard them, etc. Okay, that is the rundown of Perek Yud Ches of Vayikra. So I'd like to focus today on the issue that is discussed in the beginning, but then it has impact on the middle part, and that is what is a chok and what is a mishpat. Mm-hmm. And the Gemara and the Pasuk goes back and forth on this issue, right? The Pasuk says, first starts off by saying, make sure you don't do like the land of Mitzrayim, land of Canaan, es mishpatai tasu vech es kusai tishmeru. Make sure that you do my laws and you observe and you watch my chukos, Hashem, and as well as watch the chukos and the mishpatim. Make sure that the chukos and the mishpatim are taken care of. So what is the difference between chukos and mishpatim? So the Gemara in Maseches Yuma, the Samak Zayin Amad Beis, has a little bit of a brisa about this. The Gemara tells us, Tan Rabban es mishpatai tasu, referring to our pasuk here, es mishpatai tasu, dvarim shel mali nichtavu din hu sheyichtavu. That these things, that if not for the fact that they were written, they should have been written, they would have been considered as if they're written. The Eluhain, what are the examples of them? Avodas Kulchavim, the Gilo Arayus, the Shvichus Damim, the Gezel Birchas Hashem. That, what are they? So, idol worship, Gilo Arayus, referring to immoral relationships, Shvichus Damim, murder, Gezel Birchas Hashem. Gezel is stealing, Birchas Hashem is cursing God. All of those are things, right, that if not for the fact that it was written, we would have been able to figure out anyways, the price it seems to imply. And then, Eschukusai Tishmo, what are example of Chukim? So, Dvarim Shasatan Meshiv Aleim, things that the Satan would give you a hard time about. Why? Because there's not necessarily a reason that's split, that's clear. But the Eluhain, these are them. Achilas Chazir, eating pig. Belevishas Shatnes, wearing Shatnes. Chalitza, Yivama, Vitara, Mitzor, Visir, Mishdaleach, all the Matu Vitara, and the ideas of Tsaras, and the goat that is sent off. All of these things, we would say, maybe I would think that these things are like messed up. Tamalomar, Ani Hashem, these are my laws, and you don't have a right to start arguing on them. So you have chukim, and then you have mishpatim. Now, what was on the mishpat laws of something that, if it's obvious, of course, this is something that we would have figured out. We don't need the Torah to tell us that. So one of them is gilui arayos, the idea of immoral relationships. Immoral relationship is considered by this gemara to be on the mishpat list rather than on the chok list. Okay, we're good so far, right? Obviously, right? It's immoral and obviously these are laws. If Torah wouldn't have them, we would have had them anyways. So in the Gemara, on the page of the Gemara, there's a little note here, sends you to the side of the page, the Masorah Sashas, and it says, Ayin b'shmona prakim l'haramba, perikvav. Look in the Shmona prakim l'haramba. I think we referred to this a couple on the first day or second day when we learned this parak. I'll go to the Shmona prakim. What is the Shmona prakim of the Rambam, by the way? Remember? You mentioned this? The Rambam wrote three major works, the Mishnah Torah, right, the Book of Laws, the Moreh Nevuchim, his Guide to the Perplexed, and the Peirush HaMishnayos. In fact, I believe the first thing he wrote was the Peirush HaMishnayos, his commentary to the Mishnah. And he has three major introductions over the course of his commentary to the Mishnah. Number one is his introduction to the Mishnah, his introduction to Peirush HaMishnayos, which is all about how Torah Shebaal Peh works. Another one is introduction to Perek Chelek, which is the basis of Emunah. That's where the 13 Amimamims are come from. Introduction to the last Perek of Chelek is the is either the last or second to last parak of Sanhedrin, depending on your text. In Daf Yomi, it's in the Gemara, it's the last parak. I believe there are other. I think in Mishnayos, it's the second to last parak. Chelek is a portion, but it was the parak that the Shas is that the parak of in the Gemara, the parak is named based on the first words or one of the first words. So Kol Yisrael Yesh Lahem Chelek LiOlam Haba. That every Jew has a portion in the world to come. So that's like a very beautiful concept, except the continuation of the mission is, except for those that don't, right? So anyway, so introduction to Chelek, and it talks about the ideas of heresy going on in that parak. That's a major theme there. Those that are heretics are out. So the Rambam in his introduction to parak Chelek defines that which Jews need to believe, and one can argue, and on that's where we get the 13 principles of faith from. And then the last major introduction that the Rambam has is what we refer to nowadays as the Shmona Prakim, the eight chapters. The eight chapters is an introduction to Pirkei Avos. How many Prakim, how many chapters are in Pirkei Avos? No.
Six.
Six. Five or six, actually. There's five for sure, and then the sixth one is probably Bryce's. Not necessarily wasn't originally, but was added in to keep the count going, so that we have six prakim to learn between Pesach and Shavuos. Okay, so in the sixth of the eight chapters, which the Rambam uses to introduce the six chapters of Pirkei Avos, he brings up the following idea. He says, "Amru hafilu sofin." The philosophers, they say, "Shakovish es yitzro va'afal pishu osa ma'isim ne'olam harayu osa satov." That if you have a person who conquers his evil inclination, even though he is he's doing good things. He's doing good, so long as he is conquering his inclination. But what's considered better than somebody who conquers his inclination in order to do good? Better would be if you didn't have to worry about conquering the inclination. Meaning, if somebody is doing good despite they have their evil thoughts, so what do we consider that person? So we consider him, his mind is problematic, but he's still able to overcome that in order to do that which is good. So what would be better? The best, the real tzaddik, the real righteous person, the real chassid, would be a person who doesn't even have the thought in his mind in order to do bad. That's the Rambam quotes the name of the philosophers. What?
Yeah. But I thought a couple of instances in Chumash where somebody's taken away because they don't have any evil thoughts. They're taken away like the one that walked with Hashem in Genesis, Chumash. Right.
Okay.
He couldn't live.
Well,
here.
Yeah. Okay. That's what the philosophers say. Right, but then the Rambam
live here. Right?
Okay. He's just quoting the philosopher. Then he continues on and says, but we see many sources in Chazal that seem to not indicate that way. That seem to indicate that the more reward a person, the more challenge a person has in order to observe mitzvos, the more reward he's going to receive. Is that okay? I mean. Okay. All right. So, anybody, the greater, and also the greater the person, the greater yetzahara he has. Also, that considered a great person also has a great yetzahara. That a person will get is according to the amount of challenge he has. So is yetzahara and conquering his yetzahara. And that leads us to say, according to the pain, no pain, no gain. According to the amount of pain, that's the amount of gain that one is going to get. But even more, shame savushi adam kovish is yitzhar. A person is commanded to conquer his yitzhara. Vizirushiyomar ni mitavai, and a person is commanded to say, and this is based on a medrash, that mitavai, left to my own devices, eni mis avil averizu, vafil lo asar to Torah. I don't have a desire for this avera, but I feel low, even if the Torah wouldn't answer it. But based on that, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, "Lo yomer adam." A person should not say, "If she lechol basu v'chalav, if she lovo shatnas." I don't want to eat milk and meat. I don't want to wear shatnas. If she lovo la erva, I don't want to violate gilai rayas. What should a person say? If she, I want to do it. What should I do? That Hashem has prohibited me from doing so. Right? A person should say, I want to do it, but what can I do? Hashem has told me not to. So then how do we understand this conflict? right, on one hand, the philosophers say that that we should a person should not a person who has a yitzhahara to do bad things is not doing the right thing. But yet we have Mamari Chazal, right, the same thing that in other words. So if you would ask me, I would have said, well, throw out the philosophers and just talk about the Mamari Chazal. Right, but the Rambam doesn't go there. The Rambam seems to, first he has one or two sources for the philosophers. But beyond that, the Rambam goes ahead and makes a distinction. He says, where does it start here? Right, that those things which the philosophers say that if they have in mind to do bad, they should just go ahead and conquer it. What are those? Right. What are examples of things the philosophers are right about? A bunch of things. What are those? So things that. That left our own devices, we would know that they were bad. For example, murder, stealing, Gneva and Gazela, and Onah. Onah is price gouging, right? So all of those things are considered morally repugnant, and a person, an ideal person, a tzaddik, should not have any desire to go ahead and do those things. If they have a desire to do those things, they should try to not just overcome the desire to do it, but try to stop the desire, try to also cease having the desire. A person could work on themselves and not have that desire. Other things also is damaging somebody who did bad, right, and who didn't do bad to you. And paying good with bad, and also being mizalzel one's parents. So all of those things are considered morally repugnant. Just interesting on the zilzul horim, on the embarrassing parents. So we mentioned last night in the Shulchan Aruch shir. So the very last halacha, there's two simanim in Shulchan Aruch that talk about kivud aveim, on relationships with parents. The first one is hilchos kivud aveim, this of honoring one's parents and also being in awe of one's parents. And the second simon talks about the prohibition of striking and hitting or cursing one's parents. That one is not permitted to do that. That's the second siman. The very last halacha in that siman mentions that a ger, somebody who converts, is not permitted to go and hit their parents. That the law, those halachos of the prohibitions of one against their parents, they would apply even to somebody who converts. Right? Why should it apply even to somebody who converts? So Shulchan Aruch actually mentions the reason. The Shulchan Aruch says, Shelo Yomru, lest people say, Bata Mikadusha Chamura Mikadusha Kala. Lest people say that you came from a Chamur position, you came from a stringent position, someplace where such a thing was prohibited, and now all of a sudden it's permissible. It's borrowing language from Gemara's in Yevamos, in Sanhedrin, where it talks about converts. Let's say a person converts with their sister. So in theory, a person who converts with their sister, they're not related to each other anymore. In theory, they can go ahead and marry to one another. So the Rabbana came along and said, that looks really, really, really bad, right? But for non-Jews, such a relationship, if they were non-Jewish, such a relationship would be prohibited. And now that they're Jewish, all of a sudden it becomes permitted. So we're not going to permit anything that was prohibited to non-Jews now that they're Jewish. We're not going to allow that. So the Shulchan Aruch takes that language and uses it for this halacha as well. There's only one problem. Only one problem with that, and that is the Yad Avram is a commentary on the bottom of the page of Shulchan Aruch. So Yad Avram comments this, wait a second, who said that there's a mitzvah of Kivud Aveim when it comes to non-Jews? Right? It's not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Right? Who says that such a command would exist? So the Yad Avram comments, he says, well, the truth is, but we do see in Tanakh that relationships between children and parents, even when they're non-Jews, have repercussions. And what is the example he brings? So the B'nai Cham, right? The children of Cham are cursed. Why are the children of Cham cursed?
Because of what they did to Noah. Ah!
So what they did to Noah, they're not Jewish, why should we care what Cham did to Noah? Right. So he says, no, just because it's not one of the Sheva Mitzvahs of Noah doesn't mean it's not applicable to non-Jews. Which is actually very helpful, because there's many things that we come across that aren't amongst the Sheva Mitzvahs of Noah and are applicable to non-Jews. Right? And he says, those seven things are things that if the non-Jew violates them, they get what? The death penalty. Right? But outside of that, there are other commandments that are imposed upon non-Jews as well. included, which would be kibud avim. Other achorim say, come on, kibud avim is a mitzvah sichlios. It's an obvious mitzvah. There's the idea governing kibud avim is the idea of a karasato, giving thanks to one's the person who did so many things for them. So that would apply to non-Jews as well. So either way, right, the Rambam puts kibud avim as one of the mitzvah sichlios, one of the ones that one would be able to understand and fathom and recognize as being moral on its own. Comes the Rambam, however, and says, but there's a whole list of mitzvahs that are not like that. And what are the list of mitzvahs that are not like that? That are things that Hashem says that we can't do, and we're allowed to say, oh, if only I could do it, and you're not considered an immoral person for thinking that. Right, the things that the Chacham said, the one who conquers their inclination, the more conquering they need to do, the better off they are. And that's true. If it wasn't for the Torah, they wouldn't be considered bad. Right, and they should realize that the only thing that's keeping them from doing it is the Torah. Right, and it's true. Right? If a person would say, I would love to kill someone, I would love to steal, I would love to cheat someone, but what can I do? Hashem said I shouldn't do it. Right, that's not considered a good attitude. But the other things that are mentioned in that brisa, the things there it does talk about that it's okay to have that attitude are basa v'chalav, levisha shatnas, and arayos. Right, eating milk and meat together. Wearing shatnas, the yitzhar to wear shatnas. Oh, I would love to wear that suit, but what can I do? Hashem said I can't. Or arayos. Arayos. It's permissible for a person to say, I would love to do this act of gilur arayos. I would love to do this thing, but what can I do? Hashem said I'm not allowed to go and do it. That seems to be an appropriate attitude. In which case, that's what the Mesoras Hashas was referring to when he thinks that there's a stira. On one hand, the Gemara in Meseches Yuma seems to put arayos, immoral relationships on the Mishpat's team, on the team where it says, of course, it's understandable, and that's a moral idea, and one would be considered immoral if one violates and we're able to figure it out anyways. On the other hand, it's also put on the side in the Perush HaMishnayos that says that a person could say, gosh, I wish I would love to go ahead and do that act, but what can I do? Hashem said I'm not allowed to do it. So is Arayos a chok, or is it a Mishpat? That's my question. It seems to be a contradiction between the Gemara Maseches Yuma versus the Rambam in Perush HaMishnayos. Okay? That's the question. So we're going to stop here.
Gilas Arayas?
Gilas Arayas, right. Our immoral relationships, which one are they? Are they a Mishpat or are they a Chok?
Why does it matter?
Big reason it would matter is this attitude that the Rambam is promoting, right? Is it okay for a person to say just an attitude of, oh, I wish I could do that, but what can I do? I can't. Or is that an inappropriate attitude? And like, I should get that thought out of my head, and I'm a bad person for thinking it, and I should go talk to my therapist, I should talk to my rabbi, because why do I keep getting these thoughts into my head about that woman or any other woman or something like that?
It's not the chokmah.
Well, they're both. Everybody agrees that it's prohibited,
right?
Right. The question just is, where do I categorize it?
Is it all one category, or can there be subcategories within that category? Like some of them might be cults, and some of them might be.
Okay, so very good. So Bruce gives one simple answer, right, is that, well, I could distinguish, and perhaps nowadays it would be very helpful to distinguish, and I could say, yes, it's true, having the desire to have relations with one's mother, right, is morally repugnant. Incest is morally repugnant. But what's not morally repugnant? Homosexuality. Now, that's a little problem, because there the Torah actually calls that morally repugnant, right? The Torah actually calls that a toiv, right? An abomination, right? The word it uses is right, toeva, right? That's considered a toeva. But the other ones, I don't know. What about bestiality? Is that morally repugnant, or is that a or is that something that I could say, well, I wish I could, but what can I do? The Torah says I'm not allowed to do it, right? Now, some of it might depend on wars of the time. Some of it might depend on people's attitudes, etc., etc. There was, like, we talked about the Yetzer Hara for incest was removed. That's what the Gemara says, right? Although these things do creep up from time to time if you read, if you look at the news, right? These things do happen, incest, that people do it, etc., things like that. There is a medrash that says that when the Jews left in Parshas Balosa, it says one of the things that they complained about was that we didn't have in Egypt we were able to eat cucumbers. Right? We had all these things in Egypt, and now we don't have them, right? We used to have all these vegetables and fish and meat, etc. So Rashi, I believe Rashi quotes the Medrash, if not it's just the Medrash that Rashi doesn't quote, but either way, the Medrash says that the Jews were really, what were they really complaining about? That Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai and presented them with arayos that now are prohibited, right? It's like the joke they say when Moshe comes down from Har Sinai and says, you know, I got good news and bad news, right? The good news is I cut him down to 10, or the bad news is Arayos is still in, right? Right? So they're complaining that we don't have Arayos. So the truth is, there's a fascinating statement from Yaakov Kamenetsky, apparently not in Baal Oskos, I just looked through it, I couldn't find the place, but it's a fascinating essay where he says, I don't understand, the Torah says they're complaining about cucumbers, and the Medrash says they're complaining about sex, right? How'd that happen? How do you get from one place to the other place? Where does the Medrash get the right to say that? And he explains that that's how Midrashim work. Midrashim are working in the subconscious. And very well could be that the people complained out loud about vegetables, but underlying it was really their complaints about other things, right? Such a concept is conceivable. Maybe we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that another time. But where does that leave us with regards to Arayos? So one issue might be, well, we'll distinguish. Some are in and some are out. Some are considered morally repugnant and some are considered on this category of Yivshe. Oh, what can I do? Hashem said I'm not allowed to do it.
Well, I would say the only one that's mishpat, that's morally repugnant, is being with another man's wife or adultery.
Adultery.
Yeah.
But I can make the case that might even be the most likely to say e if she. That might most likely to say, oh, I would love to be married to her. But what can I do? The Torah said I can't. So is that a morally repugnant statement?
Because it's like stealing.
So one could make that case that would be like stealing. Okay.
We're already told that we're not allowed to steal.
In fact, that is how some understand the prohibition of immorality. Meaning the prohibition of Gilui Arayos is talking about incest. What about marrying another? Having adultery with another person's wife.
Yeah.
That's included under Geneva. That's included under Gazela.
Yeah, that's the other ones are.
Okay.
It depends on.
Right, it's not immoral. Right. Okay, very good. Very good. Very good.
Societies, bestiality is commonplace.
Okay, very good. So that's where we get to a piece from Rav Soloveitchik. Found a fascinating piece here from Rav Soloveitchik in the book Reflections of the Rav. Chapter 9, Reflection of the Rav, is written by Rabbi Avram Beistin. I think his brother is the one who was the head of JSS and YU for many years. He was the rabbi of Congregation Eitz Chaim in Flatbush, and what's very excellent about this book is that the Rav actually, this is written during the Rav's lifetime, so the Rav actually reviewed it. In fact, there's a picture on the back of him signing a copy. So that's helpful. These are taken from, he writes in the introduction, these are taken from lectures that he gave at the RCA conventions or to rabbinic alumni or at YU, but these aren't quotes, these are... It's not a verbatim talk. He reconstructed them in order to fit into. So he has chapter 9 is entitled "Surrendering Our Minds to God." Surrendering our minds to God. He raises the challenge from the. From that Gemara in he quotes the Gemara about the Chukim and Mishpatim that we quoted from Sefer Yuma. And then he discusses, well, what is the difference between a Chuk and a Mishpat? So a Chuk, and both of them have, so to speak, these are my words, advantages and disadvantages. Right? A Chuk, what's the disadvantage of a Chuk? So the Gemara itself gives us what the disadvantage of a Chuk is. The disadvantage is what?
It's not logical.
It's not logical, and we subject ourselves to ridicule, either by non-Jews or by the Satan, right? The Yitzhara says this is ridiculous, why would you possibly do this, etc.?
Exclusively on faith.
Ah, it's based on faith. Good. What's the advantage that a Chuk has in terms of, perseverance, in terms of keeping going?
You don't have to figure it out. You don't
right.
have to
But it's not subjective, right? It's an objective thing, right? Like, I don't know why the paraduma is the way it is, but that's the way Hashem said, so I'm going to go ahead and do it. It put kashrus in that category. It's very helpful, right? I don't understand why it's immoral to have milk and meat together. I could come up with theories. I don't really know why that is, but I know that that's the law, and I'm going to continue the maintenance of that law. Shabbos is very difficult, right? But it's a, and the truth is there, Hashem gives us the reason for it. But even so, I know that's the rule. There's not going to be any arguing on the rule. Okay, so that is the advantage, disadvantage of a chok. In fact, he says that that's why the Torah was inscribed on two tablets of stone. Right? It could have been on wood, it could have been on paper, it could have been on parchment, it could have been on anything. Why is it on stone? So stone demonstrates the idea that this is not going anywhere. This is stone, this is permanent, this is fixed. It's not moving. And a person is willing to go with it, right? A Jew, the line here is, the observant Jew accepts the Torah even as a patient follows the prescription of his doctor, taking complex medications, submitting to required surgical procedures. We may seek to understand and make all possible inquiries, but ultimately we accept it on faith. Right? So I once actually talked about this in Shul. I remember in Phoenix, I mentioned this in Shul. Right? Like, a person doesn't raise questions to their doctor and says, you know, you're crazy, doctor. How can it possibly be? And the doctors in the room are like, are you kidding me? They do that all the time. Yeah, all right.
You get second opinion. It's not exactly the same.
Okay.
You do get second opinion.
Now, especially.
Yes, right. Now you have WebMD, so everybody can come with their list of things. And truth is, I would, you know, from certainly as one gets into more difficult types of treatments, a person is probably to go and undergo these things. So me sort of working with people over the years, that's what I've seen. But anyways, that is with regards to the chok. With regards to mishpatim, on one hand, right, has the opposite problem. On one hand, it is subject, it is reasonable, right? One can understand it and be, you know, and say, oh, that's moral, this is not moral. The problem is it then becomes a little bit subjective. It says, well, is that in or is that out? Because apparently, right, reason, and if one has to then ask those questions, that in or is that out, so apparently the reason is not a reliable guide, even with respect to Mishpatim. What's the example he uses? So again, this is writing, you know, the 60s and 70s. For example, the mind certainly condemns murder. Everybody knows that murder is a problem. This is particularly true of the killing of a young working mother who leaves behind orphan children, right? Killing a mother with orphan children, bad. Right? Everybody agrees that that's bad. But does this abhorrence of murder also apply when the victim is an old, cruel, miserly woman who in the eyes of society was a parasitic wretch, as in Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment? You know, you read Crime and Punishment? Okay. You know who he's talking about?
One of my favorite books of all time.
Really? Okay. May we murder her in order to save a young girl from the clutches of degradation. May euthanasia be practiced to relieve the elderly and terminally ill of further suffering. Here the Logos hesitates and uncertain and imparts no decisive guidance. May we kill an infant? Certainly not. Right? The Logos and the Mishpat proclaim, right, obviously you can't kill an infant. But what about a fetus in the womb? Right? Is that just as bad? Or is it not? Right? These are questions that begin to be raised. So the Rav says that, he goes on and explains that's what the psukim mean. Right? The psukim are then coming and telling us, yes, you have chukim, and yes, you have mishpatim, and they're going to require different amount of guidance. But ultimately, what, that's the first pasuk, right? But what's the second pasuk? Ultimately, ushmartim is chukku saimes mishpatim. Ultimately, they're the same. Ultimately, they're laws, and you have to go ahead and follow follow those laws. So I was thinking you could use that piece of the Rav to try to figure out this stira, that this contradiction that we had before, right? So is arayas, is it considered a chok? Or is it considered a mishpat? So there, it's a little hazy. And it could be based on contemporary times. For one generation's findings of something being morally repugnant, might be another generation's shrug, or say, oh, okay, I can understand that. Or we're going to accept that. We're going to be diverse enough in order to include that within our realm. So therefore, we have to remember that it's going to be both a chok as well as a mishpat. It could traverse both worlds. It could traverse both categories, depending on the time, the age, and probably the subject. Objective person that's involved as well. Okay, so you have a little more to say, but it's okay. Next Rebbe is waiting.